Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John Johnson on Radio Edutalk. It is Wednesday, 8 o'clock UK time, the 28th of January, 2015. For this show tonight, I am joined by Josie Fraser, who I'll get to introduce herself in a wee minute, but everybody who is in EdTech will probably know the name if you follow various people on Twitter you've seen before. Good evening, Josie.
Good evening, John.
And maybe we could just start off, Josie, by you just giving a wee background of your sort of life in education or how you got to where you are.
Okay. I won't give you my whole potted history of life in education because okay. I've gone through the formal education system and that would be a long and very dreary story probably for everybody to bear with. But in terms of educational technology and technology to support learning, teaching and community development. I've been working in this area for a while now. I'm into my second decade in the field. I currently work for Leicester City Council as ICT strategy lead, and that's heading up the ICT strand of a very big £340 million schools building programme. Before that, I was freelance for quite a few years, and during that time I worked with JISC quite a lot, mainly on the Institutional Innovation Programme and on the Emerge project, which people might be aware of or might have even been a part of. Both those projects worked across lots of different universities and FE colleges, and the work that I was doing on the support team was mainly focusing on online communities, online identity, especially kind of professional identity in terms of working in the academic and educational space, and also around learning spaces. I did quite a bit of work around green ICT, for example, and the use of learning spaces, so the physical and digital environments. The other group that I worked with during that time was ChildNet International, who are a fantastic bunch of people. I'm sure most people listening will have heard of them and be aware of their work. They continue to be a world leader in the e-safety space and have a very positive agenda, I think, in terms of supporting young people to get the most out of online opportunities and to really focus on the positive aspects of young people's online development. And with them, I worked on the cyberbullying guidance, part of the Safe to Learn suite. So that was the UK's cyberbullying guidance for schools. I also did some work supporting school staff in terms of cyberbullying issues that came up for them, and some work for Bechtel looking at use of social networking in schools. So gives you a bit of a flavour of where I'm coming from. I've worked across FE, I've worked across schools, I've worked in HE. I'm very interested in how digital can be used to support and take forward identity and community and learning.
Well, there's a huge amount in that.
Yes.
There's tons and tons of different topics that I'd love to get into, and maybe if we've got time we can touch on one or two later on. But the thing that's at the top of our show notes at least is open educational resources and the work that you've done in Leicester City Council, which just for folk, we'll have links and things in the show notes, but it looked like to me, compared to every other local authority or whatever I've seen, that you are just miles ahead now in OER and promoting the use of open resources in the school sphere. And that seems a really exciting thing to talk about. So maybe just, unless you've got another angle into this, we could just start by describing what an OER is and what's the point and stuff.
Yeah, I will do. What I'd just comment on your opening though is that, yeah, I think from the outside, we do seem as if we are speeding ahead of other places, and we're certainly the first, local authority or city in the UK to be doing work in this way, in this area. But these are kind of the initial steps in terms of what we're trying to achieve and in terms of how we're trying to support schools in adopting and making use of and creating open educational resources or OERs. We have a long way to go, I think, because what we're fundamentally talking about is cultural change within the school sector. And we are, we've done, laid down some great foundations, I think. And I think I'm very, very proud of Leicester City Council for how supportive they've been of the work. And, you know, delighted as well to work with the schools that have been really, really positive about the work so far. So the question was, what are OERs? Yeah?
Yep. Okay. Just before, sorry, Josie, before you say that, can I just mention, if anybody's listening and they want to comment or drop a question in, if they use Twitter and use the tag EduTalk, we'll try and catch it. So, sorry.
That's fine. They can also try to reach us by psychic power.
Yep.
And I will listen out. Just in case that works too. Twitter's probably easier.
Yeah, it's probably a better chance than me noticing Twitter once I start talking or listening, I'm afraid.
Anyway. Okay, so OERs are basically educational resources, and that could be a huge range of things. So it could be your presentation, it could be your lesson plans, it could be your schemes of work, it could be data sets, it could be model policies even, a whole range of things that we can describe as educational resources that have had an open license applied to them. And by applied to them, it's not some, you don't take them down to the OER shop and get them fitted out. You basically put on either just a simple statement saying that this resource is released under open license, although obviously if your OER is something like this radio show, what you do is you would say what the license that you're applying to the show is rather than actually putting it down on the document or whatever it might be. So it's using one of a range of open licenses that are available, most popular and the best known of which is probably the Creative Commons suite of open licenses, and attaching that to your work so that you're sending a very clear message that other people can do certain things with your resource. And that's typically they can use it, they can distribute it, they can make copies of it. And with some of the licenses, the more flexible open licenses, like the ones that Leicester City Council recommend, you can also use that resource to build it on it, create your own work, and then hopefully release that as well under open license for other educators to build on.
That's great. And I'm just now thinking about our own licensing, because on the website, we've got a notice that EduTalk is under a Creative Commons license, but we never mention it on the actual podcast.
I think there's a range of ways. There's no one right way, I think, of applying open licenses. And I think it's perfectly fine to have a license adjacent to your resources to say what it is that, you know, the license that are applying to them. But obviously, if you can manage to get it onto individual resources as well, that just gives that extra clarity and assurance to people that might want to use it.
Yeah, I think I'll have a wee talk to David and talk about just putting it into the metadata of the podcast, just to clear things up, because we have had a few people on talking about OERs, and we maybe should eat our own dog food.
Yeah. Another way of doing it is also just to, you know, I mean, you're talking about the metadata, just put it in the file name. You can just leave put the statement into the file name. That's obvious then for anybody who downloads that file.
Yeah, thank you very much. And you're talking about Leicester City Council and saying, you know, they're not necessarily culturally as far on as it seems at first glance, but from an outsider, the work you've done, and just, you know, to do anything in any kind of organisation, and to get it agreed on and in stone is a real good solid base for doing anything else. And I wonder how you got to that position. Did Lester bring you in to do this, or how did it come about that you decided to go down this OER route as a city?
Okay, so no, I wasn't brought in specifically to do particular work around open education, but I was brought in to make sure that our schools get the most out of the huge investment we're putting into them at the moment. And the authority is really keen, obviously, that we're not having, you know, we've got some of the best schools in the country now, especially in terms of the infrastructure, the systems and the end user devices. And I would say that because obviously I've been overseeing all of that, but it is true as well. You know, we've got some amazing facilities now. So a really important part of my job, along with getting the schools up and running, is to actually make sure that pupils across the city really benefit from that investment. And what that means is that we have to ensure that our school staff, not just our teaching staff, our school staff, so teaching assistants, library staff, school leaders, are confident and aware of different approaches that to use technology to support their communities and to achieve the kinds of things that they want to achieve as well. So that's obviously a huge question. How do you do that in a city? One of the obvious immediate problems with that is, well, how do you know where anybody in the city actually is at the moment, other than through anecdotally schools saying, we're really, really good at this, or, oh, we're not so good at this. It's very difficult to know. So we framed a 2-year project with the schools called the DigiLit Leicester Project. And that was a project that was working in partnership with De Montfort University. And it was a kind of team effort centrally between Lucy Atkins, who worked on the project for us, Professor Richard Hall from De Montfort University, and myself, and amazing staff members from the 23 schools that we work with. And the schools that we work with are quite varied as well. We've got a bigger group of mainstream schools, but we also have smaller specialist schools for students with different types of disability, and also social, emotional and behavioural difficulties in that kind of group. So we worked with the schools and with some external experts as well. We were very lucky to have people wanting to support the project in developing a framework for what we thought the key things about digital literacy were for school staff working in SEN and secondary schools. And then we rolled that out in a big survey, which we ran twice. And the second time that we ran it was last year, and we had 701 people filling it in. So it was a good return, and gives us confidence that we can, you know, make recommendations and plan around the findings. Now, two of the areas within that survey were finding, evaluating and organising, and creating and sharing. Now, they're kinds of things that teachers have to do every day. They're very typical things. But the scores that we had in that area were not as high as we would have expected them to be, given the frequency with which staff are working with digital resources. And one of the reasons for that was that we made explicit mention of open licensing, open educational resources, Creative Commons licensing as kind of a part of the toolkit of that kind of practice. That these are things that staff should be aware of and should, you know, be able to engage with as appropriate. And what we found from the results is actually staff didn't know very much about those areas at all. They'd never heard of Creative Commons licensing, many of them. They didn't know what an open educational resource was, which is obviously a more complex and less commonplace kind of piece of language to come across to describe something as well. But and I've got no reason to think that school staff in Leicester are are particularly different from other school staff. I think that the HE sector and the FE sector are much more familiar, although they probably would say they're not as familiar as they would like to be.
Yeah.
But I think they are much more familiar as a sector with this area and with open licensing issues and with copyright things in general. So if you think, for example, of somebody who's working as a researcher who's creating papers, they're going to come into contact with conversations about intellectual property ownership and copyright a bit more than many school staff are going to be. So from that, basically, came a range of recommendations from an analysis of the data of the two surveys we undertook. And both years, one of the recommendations was we need to do more work around supporting staff in understanding and being able to tap into open educational resources, and also, obviously, to really try and promote them to create open educational resources and use the resources that they've already got and licensed and openly license those. So it was kind of a path, really, in terms of where it came from. And then in terms of Leicester City Council taking it on board, they were actually very positive about it. I had to go to several committee meetings and board meetings and explain what the kinds of work that we were doing and we wanted to do around open licensing and why we wanted to do it and what the benefits were for the council as well as for the schools. And they were very positive about it. I really didn't experience huge setbacks or blockages. So I'm very, very grateful for that.
I think you must have a good persuasive model there or something to get there, because I mean, just right, even from the grassroots. I mean, one of the things you're trying to promote is sharing, and I think one of the things that makes teachers quite often reluctant to share is in the back of their mind they know that PowerPoint deck has got, you know, several images they've just grabbed from Google, so.
Sure.
They end up only sharing it with their class or in sort of silos that can't be seen. And I suppose it's a huge win in just workload if you're able to share things apart from
that. It's a huge win in many ways. I think, obviously, for me, I think it's for a school. The fundamental thing is it's promoting and showing the great work that you as a school are doing. So you're letting other people see, well, actually, we are doing this amazing work. We're producing these amazing resources. I think it's for us as a city councillors, for an authority, obviously, it's a great way to ensure public value, because these are publicly funded employees. It is in the public interest to get as much value out of the work that we're actually doing. I think there's obviously a huge agenda for both the council and the schools in terms of equality of access to learning for everyone. And open licensing is a great way of supporting that. Obviously, learners in the UK are globally very much more advantaged than other learners, but there are still benefits to access in this country for people who don't necessarily get those the same kinds of things for that from their schools, as well as internationally as well. And I think the point that you're talking about, you know, how limiting it is for staff if they can't share work because they're not sure about where they got images from or whether they've got the rights to use those images, I think is a really key point. It's very limiting to not kind of be aware and to not adopt practices, especially when it's so easy to substitute open licensed resources for pictures or other resources that are under copyright. So that whole piece about it being an important approach to support staff in understanding and really modelling copyright issues as well for their learners is a key one.
And I'm wondering as well that you know you've got this basis we've got to sort of promote a culture of sharing, and that seems to be the next step after having this license. You've made, I guess, the staff across your schools very aware of the license. You're using it, the council's using it themselves. And is there any other than the sort of legal barriers and the knowledge barriers, do you think there's any other barriers to staff sharing resources?
I think there's big cultural barriers, and I think anybody that's worked in ed tech for any amount of time will tell you that most, 80% of our work is about psychology and about human relations and insecurities and all of those other things that lots of other areas are also about. I mean, in terms of the barrier around ownership, I think it's probably important to say, because I haven't commented on it, in terms of our response to the work that we've done. So we've created a whole suite of resources for staff to support them in understanding and getting to grips, really, with open licensing. And that consists of four key guidance documents that kind of cover all of the basics and fundamentals of finding things, putting licenses on things, and sharing things, reusing things. We also created a bunch of practical kind of walkthroughs for staff, showing them things like, how do you find a picture on Flickr that's under Creative Commons license, and how do you then put that into your presentation? How do you acknowledge that? And another one that we did was around, how do you use Wikipedia to make Wikibooks for your class, or indeed even get your class to use Wikibooks? So it's a range of kind of guidance and very practical information and support, but linked to that is the permission that we have given to the community schools across the city, where Leicester City Council is the employer. Now, the situation in Scotland, I know, is a lot more simple and straightforward than the situation in England is at the moment in terms of schools. We've got 106 schools in the city, and out of those, 83 are community schools, and one is a voluntary controlled school. And what that means is that the authority is the employer of those schools. So we've given staff in those schools blanket permission to openly license their educational resources. That takes care of the legal and ownership issues that all employees, not just school employees, are subject to. And I think it should be really welcome by the schools. We have some trust schools, we have 8 academies, and we have 8 voluntary aided or faith schools in the city. And we're working with them as well to support them to adopt local policies. And we've created model policies as well for both kinds of schools to adopt locally to take forward. So there's, in terms of the pieces of the puzzle in moving this forward, obviously there are the educational and awareness things, which is our starting point, really, because if you don't know that those things exist, you can't access them, you can't benefit from them, you can't contribute to them, you can't engage with those communities. The second piece is around the kind of the legal requirements and framework, and who owns what within the relationship of being a school employee and a school employer. And then the third bit, I think, is that bit that you've kind of alluded to, really, which is, how do I feel as an individual staff member in terms of sharing my resources in an open community? And some staff members are very, very positive about that opportunity, and some staff members are very nervous about that opportunity, and again, for a whole range of reasons.
And do we have, I mean, is there a way to bring people closer, other than, I mean, you're obviously providing resources and things, and I maybe just should branch off and mention that I believe all the resources around this are licensed under a Creative Commons license.
Yep.
So it would make it sort of delightfully easy for another said to your local authority to at least produce the material, because all they would need to do is take yours, change it to suit themselves, and make sure that they're attributing it back to Leicester.
Very much so.
It's kind of an amazing gift to all the other local authorities in Scotland and or in Britain and schools and cities and all the rest of it. When you think of it,
we purposefully, yeah, again, this is public money that's funded this project and this work. Obviously, our immediate aim is to benefit our schools and to support the kind of move forward in terms of the use of technology and knowledge and understanding of the schools that we're working with. But we work in a public context, and we model, you know, it's really important to model that practice too, and to bring the value of that work to as many people as possible. And I really, really do hope that other authorities and schools use, adapt the materials that we've produced. Durham have recently put up the resources, and they've cunningly gone through the resources, and they've changed where it says school to HE and FE. So yeah, they've adapted them for the FE and HE audience already. There's also, they've been producing a couple of other languages already as well, which is brilliant news, and hopefully more to come on those too.
So, yeah, I mean, you get a nice, I imagine the people that worked on these get a nice, warm, fuzzy feeling about them. I guess you could look at education as a sort of moral imperative rather than trying to make money out of it. And
well, there's that, but I'd also say in terms of, you know, raising achievement and attainment and supporting staff development, open education and working around open licensing and openly licensing resources really can support that, because as anybody who's blogged knows, working in public makes you up your game. You know, you do write differently, you work differently, so it can help facilitate and support that striving for making work even better. It can help showcase what work is going on and have that transparency for the school community, for parents and carers. And it can help professionals connect to other professionals. And I think that's really, really important, because one of the key things, I think, for educational professionals is to be really confident about their own development and their own works, and you can't do that in isolation. You can't do that just without reaching out, I think, and without connecting to other people, without developing within community.
There's a couple of things in there that I recently was at, not that recently, a conference where Jonathan Worth was talking.
Yes, he's up the road from us.
Right. Okay. And yeah, I can't remember the name of the university he was at. But
Coventry.
So he opened up his courses and provides them for free, and has benefited the university hugely because they get more people coming, I think.
Yeah. So that's the Phonar project,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fantastic project.
And I wonder, you know, have you seen anything like that? Not, I mean, obviously been doing it for a while, but anything like that? Are people attracted to Leicester because of the working conditions, or?
I think it's a little bit early days. Obviously, people want to come and work in Leicester because it's an amazing place to be. Mm. And it's a fantastic city. We have some of the best food in the country. And, you know, we have a very diverse cultural population as well. We're very cosmopolitan in terms of UK cities as well. So I think that's probably more of the reason why people want to come and work here than the work that we're doing around at the moment.
Yeah.
But hopefully this will contribute to the good standing of Leicester as a city.
I could just see that, you know, for some people in education, that they would like to work under those circumstances.
Yes.
You know, they'd like to be able to do it. The other thing, the other sort of reluctance people have to sharing sometimes is expressed in that, you know, that they don't think, they either don't think what they're doing is good enough to share, or they think they will receive criticism.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you've come across that.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that a bit today. I think it is very difficult. I think the majority of people are not super confident about every aspect of their lives. That's just not how people are normally. And, you know, I've taken part in things like consultations where people are hesitant to put forward their views because they feel that they might be challenged or attacked or, you know, in those kind of professional terms. And I think that's common in many, many areas. People don't speak out because they are nervous about, the kind of stress and tension that it can cause sometimes. The other side of that is that obviously being connected to a community of your peers, being in a network of people who are positive and supportive and work as critical friends in terms of your work is an incredibly powerful and precious thing, I think. And you can't have that without some risk. You can't have that without some risk. And I think it's, you know, for me, it's really about trying to get across the power of those kinds of activities and those kinds of connections and supporting people to become more confident in what they do, you know, and not expecting them to immediately have a huge online presence and be sharing all kinds of things, you know, but, you know, thinking about it in small practical terms and recognizing that starting to share things online, starting to engage in online communities, starting to engage in online conversations is a new thing for lots of people. They don't operate in that way, especially not professionally in that way. So it's really about small steps and focusing on the real positives and benefits to people of operating in those spaces and making those connections.
Sure, yeah. And the other thing I'm wondering about is, does Leicester provide a sort of mechanism or space for people to share, or do you use, you know, Flickr and things like that that are already existing?
Yeah, no, this is a question that's come up quite a few times. No, we don't have a central repository. Obviously, we have like project blogs and things and we use those, but that's a kind of informal way of sharing them rather than a formal repository. We don't plan on having that. In terms of sustainability, I don't think that's hugely sustainable. We can't guarantee that there'll always be somebody to look after that there'll always be funding to take care of that. And it's quite a big commitment in many ways to do that. It's not really our job. So what we do is obviously we support staff in sharing in as many ways as possible and signpost existing repositories that particularly OER only repositories. Obviously, the kind of mainstream repositories that use Creative Commons licensing, so Flickr, you've mentioned, YouTube's another big one, although the license there is only CC BY, there's no option on that. And also, you may have seen that the TES this week have introduced Creative Commons licensing for the materials that staff are sharing on their site. They're one of the most mainstream school staff sharing sites in the world.
Really?
So it's a huge, huge move and gives the opportunity to host things there too under open license. And obviously schools have their own websites, staff have their own blogs too.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of approach that we're taking. But yeah, the repository question is one that always comes up.
I kind of think it's interesting because, you know, even places that are well equipped with repositories, what people usually do to find stuff is
go to Google
or, you know. So even if you're putting your stuff in somewhere else, it makes good sense to have it at least Googleable.
Yeah. Or obviously other mainstream search engines are available too, but exactly that though.
Yeah,
you know, if you can't find it through a non-specialist search, then it's unlikely to, you know, that the people that might really benefit from it will find it. So I do really support specialist repositories, and I think that people should put things on there, and they should attach the right metadata to them and everything else so that people can find them that they're when they're looking there. But you need to be mindful of how mainstream search takes place.
Yeah, and I think most people just... There may be other search engines, but I think most people go straight for Google. I don't know if that will change in a few years' time or whatever, which maybe... I don't know how you are for time, Josie, because we've kind of running on, but that kind of touches on your... The other thing that we thought we might talk about a wee bit, it's digital literacy.
Okay.
In Leicester, which obviously a huge part of that is the OER work. And I'm just thinking my sort of knee jerk to go for Twitter, maybe needs some, digital literacy wrapped around it. But what sort of focus are you, what are the, maybe the main things that you're looking at in Leicester at the moment?
In terms of, well, it's a kind of, the approach that we've taken is kind of a framework, broadish approach, because obviously it's a huge area.
Yeah.
It's a huge area. So the approach that we've taken is really to identify the key areas, for staff working in secondary and SEN schools. So they were identified as the two that I've mentioned already: finding, evaluating and organising, creating and sharing. Also, assessment and feedback, communication, collaboration and participation. And that one's kind of, that one includes more kind of learner voice type things in that area too. And learner engagement and governance. E-safety is obviously a huge one, and technology supported professional development. So they're the kind of strands that we run across. We've run some projects centrally. The OER project being a really good example of the one that we've done. And we also have been supporting schools in leading on school-led projects too. And those are projects that are designed and managed and delivered by the schools. So they're reasonably varied, but they fall inside those kind of categories. So what our focus has been on is articulating what the key things are and then supporting staff in taking their skills forward in those areas. And in terms of the feedback that we got back from the last survey, we had a 21% 21% of our group significantly improved over an 8-month period. So it's been a nice period of rapid development for the city and engagement in a whole host of work that's helped support learners but also take staff skills forward. And there've been things like, so we did a project with ChildNet that looked, and three of our SEN schools that support learners on the autistic spectrum, that created resources and information for people working with learners and young people on the autistic spectrum around e-safety, because obviously they have a whole different range of needs and ways of engaging and things that, and more useful ways of being communicated with than a lot of mainstream learners. Yeah. Obviously, depending where they are on the autistic spectrum, but our kind of cohort of learners cuts right across, right across that. We've done some great learner voice projects. So we had, MP6 political speaking project, which is a competition for Leicester school kids to do public speaking. And that's amazing to watch. Absolutely amazing to watch. 14 and 15 year olds tell politicians what they think is something to behold. Yeah. We've also had, projects using technology that's quite well established and quite simple, but in really interesting ways. So one of our schools did a live Skype concert with a school in South Africa.
Right.
Mm. And they, you know, they used the event to build up and learn about each other's cultures, learn songs, and to practice. And that was pretty amazing as well. So a whole range of really, really interesting projects going on. But how we're trying to move it forward is by framing it and focusing on what those key areas of staff skills and practice are.
So a wee question just coming out of that, Josie, is maybe, you know, you mentioned Skype and earlier on you mentioned YouTube. And certainly looking across Scotland, and I don't know how much in England, it's a really varied pattern of what's blocked and what's not blocked in different local authorities. And I wonder, I'm guessing Leicester's probably on the liberal end of the spectrum.
So we've got the, there is more granularity in the filtering, and also some of our schools have opted out of the local authority filtering as well and filter at local level too. Obviously there's a huge amount of responsibility that goes along with that, but some schools have preferred that in terms of flexibility and granularity. But we've had things like social media sites unblocked in the city for quite a few years now, in terms of, you know, a recognition that some services are really, really useful to support education and can be legitimately viewed and viewed as educational services and sites. So it's not perfect, and I still think that there is some frustration around the flexibility and granularity, but I think it's getting there. It's getting there much more now.
Yeah, I mean, that's quite... encouraging, I think, that somebody that's a wee bit ahead probably of the curve is going that way. Because I say it's spotty everywhere else, I think. I'm not sure sometimes that, you know, the different blockers are sometimes just this is the way we do things because we've done it that way. And certainly I remember talking to David Gilmore in East Lothian Council in Scotland who have opened YouTube up completely, and really opened it up because he asked the question, why did, you know, who made the decision? And they couldn't actually find the person that made the decision to block it.
Nobody knew why they blocked it.
Yeah, so at that point I think they opened it up as a temporary measure. And I may be getting this story mixed up, but I believe after a wee while that then somebody suggested that it needed locked, and they surveyed staff, and the staff were just 100% in favour of keeping it over because of the sort of rich resources.
It's very frustrating to staff if they spy useful resources and useful working practices, and then they can't carry them out in the classroom without writing out a business case and petitioning for 6 months. It's really frustrating. So that's really positive. And obviously linking in with that is the e-safety issues, which are really, really important, I think. And in a situation where you're acknowledging that there's huge value to be had from social networking, social online collaborative services, and also acknowledging the fact that you as a school will have some responsibility regardless of how great your blocking and filtering policies are, because students may be getting up to things on their own time that you may still find yourself having to sort out and having to take on board. So, for example, if students are cyberbullying each other outside of class time, their parents can come and knock on your door and ask you to intervene and to deal with it. So I think that it is really important that staff feel confident and comfortable around e-safety issues and are aware of that. And the results from our survey are really positive in that respect. I think the recent changes, and especially to the to inspection, have actually been quite positive in terms of the confidence that staff show and feel that they have around e-safety issues.
And I mean, I think we probably should be thinking of letting you escape, because you're I think presenting somewhere tomorrow.
Yes, tomorrow we've got the OER Schools Conference, which I believe is the first OER Schools Conference certainly in the UK. Very excited. And it's designed really to support school staff in engaging with the guidance that we've released and give them an opportunity to discuss those issues in the context of their peer community and think through the kind of very practical issues in terms of implementing open licensing practices into the schools. So we've got some great speakers. Miles Berry's coming along. We've got Bjorn Hasser coming along, who led on the guidance. We've got Marie Guy coming along, who's fabulous. And Richard Hall's going to be chairing tomorrow as well. We've got a panel session. And we've got like a split the day up. So we've got a briefing session in the morning for everybody. And we've got quite a lot of head teachers who unfortunately aren't able to come for the whole day, but are able to come for the briefing session and get a really good high-level overview of the issues. And then we've got workshops going on, and they're around implementing policy and the kind of practical issues. They're around how open educational resources and licensing can support and fit in to the new computing curriculum. Mm-hmm. And Miles Berry is going to be leading on those, and we've got sessions for primary schools and for secondary schools. We've got sessions that are kind of introductory, practical, hands-on. How do I get started? What do I do? Where's my first steps in finding out about OER and making use of them? And we've also importantly got an accessibility workshop that David Ford's going to be presenting. And why that's important is because I think if you are going to increase your use of and production of digital resources, then you should be really confident about basic accessibility checks and things, and just sure that things that you're putting out aren't going to be difficult for people to engage with or to benefit from. So he's going to be running that session for us tomorrow as well.
It looks like a brilliant day, and I'm reading about it on your blog, of course, which is www.josiefraser.com. Some other links, maybe there's one to schools.lesner.gov, and they've got some open resources in there. There's your Twitter, you tweet it at Josie Fraser, and we'll stick these links into the show notes. Is there any other links that are important, or you think you'd want to share, or can we get
there? I think you want to check out the Leicester City Council Schools Open Education Resources page.
Yeah that's the one.
Because that's got all of the resources in one handy place for you to download from.
I think that's the one I'm looking at. It's schools.leicester.gov.uk
and
LS/open-education. That'll be it, yeah.
And then all of our resources are obviously rounded up from the project on digilitless.com. Under the blog tab, we have schools that do work with us and do their own projects. They're openly licensing their own work, and they're sharing some really interesting and useful project outputs and findings on that site as well.
Brilliant. You maybe can pop me a wee message or something with that.
I will do. I'll round it up for you.
Stick it on, and we'll have this on EduTalk over the next couple of days. Just if people are listening, with some more shows coming up. Next week, we've got Dr. Victoria Goodyear, who's talking about tweeting about PE. We've got people talking about iPads. The week after that, we've got stuff about the hands-on ICT MOOC, and you can read about all that at edutalk.cc/upcoming. And all it really means for me to do is say a huge thank you, Josie. I don't think we even scraped the surface of the brilliant work you've done, but a really good introduction to OER for schools, maybe for local authorities. And I really hope that we see the Leicester resources popping up with maybe different badges on over the next wee while.
Yes, that would be fabulous.
And an odd wee link back to yourselves. So thank you very much. And for everybody listening, good night.
Thank you.